Welcome to the Shutdown Fullcast, tonight's edition of the internet's least prepared college football podcast, which we are, I think, slightly more prepared tonight because we have more people on. Therefore, even if they did marginal preparation like calling into the show, that's still more preparation than you've got right now. Oh, everyone into the pool. Lifeguards, give up. It's caddy day. Everyone into the pool. Joining me, the editor of Every Day Should Be Saturday and editor at large at SB Nation. Joining me, Ryan Nanny, as usual. Say hi, Ryan.
I'm in the booth in New York. The air conditioning is off in the building right now.
Turn up the heat.
I might have to take off my shirt at some point. This sucks. The things I do for you.
All beats necessarily sexy right now. That is so good, and you're keeping it green.
Yep.
From Kennesaw, Georgia, connected miraculously with even more miraculous sound quality, Jason Kirk.
Yo, how crystal clear am I sounding this week, by the way?
Sounding like a mandatory gun owner. With the kind of clarity that only the fear of your fellow man can bring, a.k.a. Kennesaw, Georgia.
Yeah. They're sending the Atlanta Braves nearby. It's like a million miles away from where the Braves were. Totally different.
It's at least 3 miles away.
Basically the same continent, at least.
Crazy racist up there. The people who jumped in the pool today are guests. First, are you still in Columbia, Missouri?
I absolutely am.
He said that like you were like, how many years do you have left on your prison sentence? He was like, still 28 months to go.
I'm going to put some money on your account. Get you something nice at the commissary, Bill. Well, you look at this. Bill Connolly, the most dogged evangelist for advanced statistics in college football, nay, perhaps football as a whole, in Columbia, Missouri. You outlasted Gary Pinkle. Do you feel like Morgan Freeman in The Shawshank Redemption, right? Like, suck it, other inmates, I'm still here.
Well, it's weird because the head coach is now Barry Odom, who was like a junior linebacker when I was a freshman and who I liked because he kicked the ass of my high school team in like 1994. So it feels like he's been here longer, even though he left. So I think I'm okay. I'm at least at worst second in command here.
Bill is joining us tonight to tell us how wrong we are about things. And that is a theme tonight, by the way. The theme of the show will be looking back at all the previews we did and realizing how wrong we already are. We will have an automated segment from Bud Elliott from the Budtron 5000. It turns out, by the way, the bent of our own envisioned history for the next 4 months is towards haterdom, deep haterdom.
Wow. Because so different for this podcast.
We may have set a new standard for this because we may not have actually filled all of the slots necessary to field bowl teams. Like, that's how down we are on every single football team in the nation, not named Texas or Stanford.
Or apparently LSU.
Yeah, or LSU.
We'll get there. Calm down, Bill. We have another guest to introduce.
We do. Joining us, a fellow inmate this time, incarcerated in New York City and unable to leave anytime soon for his sunny native home of Southern California. The dumbest man in the world forever leaving, Dan Rubenstein. Hi, Dan.
Heaven help the foes of Washington. They're trembling at the feet of mighty Washington. How's it going, fellas?
you're riding that UW train already?
Oh my god, I'm so ready. I'm also in a room. I'm not in the booth that Ryan is in. Ryan's still in the office. I am in my apartment, and I have like a very small, like, enclave kind of room, but it is not ventilated at all. And I have taken my shirt off while recording podcasts in here.
Yeah, I've seen Dan's recording room. It's not the way he's got it set up, but if you were watching like a British murder mystery and they searched. Mm-hmm. They search the suspect's house. This is the room. This is the windowless room that they would open and find like jars full of human hands in there. Jan has one of those rooms.
The small albino child he kept there for years.
Yeah. Don't talk about Ty that way.
That would be so Ty cruel. Hildenbrandt, Dan's co-host on the Solid Verbal, the actual, like the second actual real podcast besides this Travisham mockery that we put together every single
week. You're gonna say that right in front of Bill?
I know, I'm right here, guys.
I said the second. The other one being podcast can't play nobody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're the third mutant child of the family. You know, the one that was conceived when you lived in Oak Ridge near the lab.
I know Stephen Godfrey, too much of a coward to join us tonight to defend his shit talking about Stanford. Godfrey, I know where you are, and I will find you.
I think we can claim that Ty and Godfrey are here, and like they weren't able to take their shirts off, so our mics can't pick them up, apparently.
Sure.
Like, I think we could claim all sorts of people are here. Who could prove it wrong?
Brian Floyd is joining us.
Brian Floyd is always on the mic.
What? Mm-hmm. What now? Huh.
Yeah, we have Zach Lowe, NBA expert Zach Lowe. Yeah,
and Gary Patterson is here with us tonight.
JJ Redick. Yep. Michelle Obama. Happy to be here.
Michelle Branch as well.
Yep. Man, that's amazing.
Have you guys listened to other college football podcasts outside of the SB Nation universe?
We're fine. Regularly?
Either.
Yeah, sure.
We're fine. We're fine.
I know. We're totally fine. I listen to, and I like the two of them very much, Bruce Feldman and Stuart Mandel's most recent show.
The Audible, yeah.
The Audible on Fox Sports. They're two great people and great writers. At the end of the show, Bruce just started asking Stu what drugs he's done. which, as you imagine, was met with a bunch of, no.
Ooh,
it was very wonderful.
Very limited selection, ooh, I imagine, yeah. There.
Yeah. Can't say I've ever gotten wet.
I won't ask Bill Connolly that because I don't think it's fair to make a man admit that he's, you know, smoked freebase cocaine in public. Mm-hmm.
This reminds me of Ryan, do you remember a while back when you and I came up with like it was like a script for a sitcom about the Solid Verbal? Do you remember this? This was a couple years ago. It was like Dan incredulous that Ty had never eaten a banana.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yes. Yeah. It's a whole
Ty,
series.
Are you serious?
Right.
You have never eaten a banana. And
Dan,
Ty's like,
Dan,
I've never had the inclination.
Just never come around.
Just never seen the point of banana. Love a good apple, Dan. Don't see the need for bananas. Exotic.
I cannot believe this.
Does this exist somewhere?
Who knows what Google Doc it's in? But
Dan, I gotta tell you, best bread for a breakfast sandwich: saltine crackers. They're there for you every time.
It was like a one page pitch. I don't think we got it to NBC in time.
No.
You know, for production. But one of these days,
we'll get it piloted.
Oh
yeah.
My God. That's the most wonderful thing.
So we're gonna break in a little bit here for Bud's first segment. Before we do, I want to jump in with our first question of the night. This comes from @AllisonDeJong. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm sorry. She says, "Would y'all mind promoting some Louisiana flood recovery resources like @SecondHarvestGNOA on the show?" No, we would not mind that at all, because I looked at this up right before we started podcasting. 30,000 people have had to be rescued in the flooding going on in Louisiana right now. And I am absolutely not going to go into any navel-gazing media discourse here. But if you don't know somebody who lives in the affected part of Louisiana, which right now is almost half of the parishes in the state, you might not be aware that there's massive, terrible flooding going on there. Something like 40,000 homes impacted by it. One of our contributors for the LSU blog, Billy Gamilla, his house flooded. The area where he lives hasn't flooded in 35 years. So if you can donate anything to help the people affected by the Louisiana floods, that would be awesome. This is a time when they could really, really use your help more than ever.
We will, and by the way, with all of our posts on this, we will include links to relevant, verified, and legitimate charities for these things. That's important. You want to make sure you know who you're giving your money to, but you know that we will include that. Also know that this is one of those things where the area affected Louisiana means a lot, I think, just in general culturally, but also particularly to this subculture, because there is college football, and yes, then there is college football in the South, and then there is college football in Louisiana, which is one of those places where it occupies an inordinately large role in people's spiritual, emotional, and personal lives. So we obviously care a lot about it. We hope you do too. And even if you don't, you should give money anyway, just to convince people that you're a good person.
I will say there is one tweet from a Weather Channel person that is meant to mostly emphasize how much rain fell on parts of Louisiana, but it also serves as inadvertent stunting. And this is why. It's a graph that shows the rain that Watson, Louisiana got over the course of 4 days. They got 31.39 inches. Los Angeles, since January 2012, has had 29.18 inches. So on the one hand, no, Louisiana did not need that much rain in 4 days. On the other hand, what's up, L.A.? You shit.
Ryan, have you been to a game in Baton Rouge?
No, I have not. I am a failure.
It is. So I've been to a game. One, it was extraordinary. And two, it rained like crazy when I went. And rain in Louisiana is no joke. It was like I ran under a tree before my dumb LA head was like, hey, isn't this where lightning strikes? And then ran away from the tree. But it was like the raindrops were like 10 times the size of dumbass LA raindrops. It's ridiculous.
I went to Florida this past weekend. This is how you know that I spent some considerable time in the state. I went walking on the beach, and a thunderstorm was moving not over, but kind of half adjacent, right? We were just getting like a little margin of it on the beach. And I remember thinking this, oh, that's an acceptable amount of lightning to take a walk in.
You're so dumb.
No, I was right. I didn't get struck by lightning.
Oh, okay. See? Well, shit.
The system works.
You done did it again. Let's talk college football. Bill, I've sent you the list Jason has put together of all of our picks, which I should point out, we've just made in random groupings. We didn't actually think about how these all look together on the paper. Of the records we predicted, which one do you look at and think, God, my coworkers are so, so, so dumb?
They all look fantastic.
No, Bill, yes. Don't lie to us.
Yes.
Well, I mean, you have Alabama losing twice, which in the regular season, which doesn't make – I can't really comprehend that one. That one doesn't seem like something that could actually happen. So that one certainly caught me off guard. Utah winning 8 games, I'm not real sure about this year. But I've gotten yelled at enough by Utah fans, so that looks great too.
That's it? We did everything else right?
Perfect. I like not having to tut you about Iowa because you just gave a 1-0 record there. That saved me the energy and the breath, and I really hope you're right about Washington State. That's the other team that's yelled at me a lot this offseason. So I hope they go 9-3 and they're totally awesome. Texas is probably not going 9-3.
I told you assholes. How many times have I told you they're not? Oh. Thank you, Bill. I've never felt so vindicated.
Bill, did you not see with the throws their freshman quarterback made in spring ball?
And I feel weird because like I'm also talking up Georgia, and they also probably have a freshman quarterback. But
that one out route in the spring game, and like that video was my whole timeline for a week.
I did like a couple days ago or whatever, a week. I don't know how time works, but when it turned out that what was his name, Swoops is still challenging for the starting job there, and everybody like. Texas fans and non-Texas fans all went at the same time because that's a big red flag waving right there. If Swoops is better, then yeah, you're not going 9-3.
Now with Swoops, were there like two stories at once, or am I getting the headlines confused? Where it's like we might move on to wide receiver. He might be the starting quarterback. Two things at once?
Went to receiver.
Okay.
Swoops, I didn't hear about going.
I mean,
to receiver.
Texas, there are just so many good quarterbacks that I cannot keep them.
That's
all.
True. Yeah, it's hard.
I like to think that was Texas's version of lighting up the bat signal, even if you know Batman's not coming, just to sort of like scare off criminals. Just be like, oh, you never know. There's a signal. Might be Swoops' time. Get off the streets, y'all. Stay safe.
This is my favorite thing, Bill, by the way, that I believe you are right about everything, and I do not doubt any of it, save this, that statistically you could look at Georgia and not see the unstatistical, ignorant human waste that will be this year, and a guy in his first year on the job learning with the candy. Like, this is such a bad situation because there's a freshman quarterback over here, and then you have an experienced quarterback who's nowhere near as good as the freshman over here, right? And he's just not going to be able to reconcile potential versus boring stability. It's just not – and I know it's like, oh, Nick Chubb. Okay, let me explain to you the voodoo legend of Georgia. It doesn't matter what that shiny name is, okay? They're going to blow it. You won the lottery. You'll be broke by October.
I realize what I'm doing when I was talking myself into Georgia. It didn't feel good. It didn't feel right. but maybe it's that's the bargaining going on. Like, I don't want to just hand everything to Tennessee, and I don't think Florida's going to do it, so it must be Georgia.
I mean, what if...
And Nick Chubb. Nick Chubb's awesome. Chubb, they were averaging like 8 yards a play with Schottenheimer as their offensive coordinator last year. He's going to get hurt again in like the second game, but until then, I can believe that they can, challenge.
All right, this is the part in the podcast where, as we mentioned, Bud Elliott recorded some audio for us earlier. Bud has an SEC team you should watch out for from a betting perspective for the national championship. Is it Georgia? I don't know. You have to listen to the next however many seconds this is. Go, 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 go.
Ultimately, we know that for about the past 2 decades, if you want to win a national title, at least since the advent of the BCS, you need to have brought in more 4- and 5-star recruits than 2- and 3-stars in the previous year. This has held up remarkably well. Thank you, Alabama, by the way, for just taking the best recruits and not treating them like Mac Brown did and actually winning lots of national titles with them. Big fan of Nick Saban for that reason. Also Urban Meyer and basically anybody who actually signs the top recruits and doesn't just, crash the plane into the mountain. Anyway, your teams that fit that criteria this year, and the probably only teams I would actually consider betting on for the national title, Alabama, Ohio State, LSU, Notre Dame, Florida State, Michigan, Auburn, UCLA, actually, Georgia, Texas A&M, and Clemson. Texas mercifully falls off this list just barely this year, and I'm sure they'll be back on it next year, maybe with Charlie Strong, maybe with somebody else, but... yeah, having them in that group the last couple of years was kind of embarrassing. So luckily they're at the 49% mark. Just missed it. Thank God. I think any of those teams is a pretty good pick for the national title. If you want to know the next couple teams that fall just below that mark, Texas, Tennessee at 45, Florida at 39, Ole Miss at 39, Miami at 38. USC is also technically in that list that counts, but they took a real small class in 13 and a pretty small one in 14. So they only have 76 signees over the last 4 years. Not really up to par there, but if you're going on a percentage basis, you do have to include them. Then you look at some teams like a Michigan State, if you're into the Spartans, that kind of thing, 28%. Good enough to reach the playoffs. They certainly did it last year. Good enough to win? I'm not so sure. I wrote last year, I think that the playoff is actually going to make it easier to contend for the national title for non-elite recruiters. But I actually think it'll make it harder to win because once you get in, chances are you're going to have to win 2 games against elite recruiters consecutively as opposed to just 1 back in the old BCS system. TCU's at 12%. Oklahoma, by the way, is at 36%. Honestly, nobody in the Big 12, unless you want to count Texas, has recruited at a national championship level. But I think TCU and Oklahoma certainly could at least make the playoff. Now, if you take that list of teams that meet the criteria to win the national title, and then you cross-check it with the list of the national title odds, it really reads kind of one-for-one for a lot of it. Alabama first, Ohio State second, Clemson, Florida State, LSU, Michigan, Oklahoma's there at 12-1. I wouldn't bet that with your money. Tennessee at 14-1. Again, Tennessee, I think, is going to be much improved. I actually like Tennessee this year, despite the fact they're coached by Botch Jones and Josh Jobs' quarterback rating against ranked teams is very similar to what Treyon Harris's was. against ranked teams, so not super promising. But I like the rest of their roster enough that I do actually like Tennessee this year, just not for the national title. Notre Dame at 22-1, USC at 25-1, TCU at 35-1. If you're of the mind that you might want to try and hedge, TCU at 35-1 might not be a bad play if you think they can get through this thing undefeated. Their schedule's not that crazy. Washington at 35-1, no. Iowa at 41, maybe at 140-1. Stanford, if you think they can go through the Pac-12, I guess, and are really into the whole player retention and development, and if you like David Shaw, the deployment aspects of college football. But if you're going purely off what is the most talented team I can get at super long odds rationale, Texas A&M at 75-1, and not really something I want to take, but that is a whole lot of talent on that team that'll be playing on Sundays, and a coach who knows where he'll be coaching next year. At 75-1, crazier things have happened, I guess. Those are the same odds as like a Miami or an Oklahoma State, and I don't think anybody thinks those teams are winning the national title either, but at least Texas A&M has recruited at the bare minimum standard in order to reach that mark over the last four seasons. Ultimately, college football is kind of the most boring, predictable sport in some ways, and that everybody else outside of a very small group is just playing for second. They have like the most repeat, most often national champions of really any sport out there, and the vast majority of the college football teams in D1 are not going to win a national title ever. So we still watch because it's fun, because we want to see how are all the teams that actually do recruit at that level, how are they going to screw that up? How is Florida State going to top getting a kick return from the best kicker in their program's history for a touchdown on national television? You know, how is Tennessee going to top those four crippling losses last year? How many shades of purple will Brian Kelly turn? I'll be watching.
Our next question comes from Christian Ashlock at Cashlock on Twitter.
Nice.
Who is most likely to do a Georgia Tech 2014-2015 this year? So going from three losses
Iowa.
Last season.
Wow.
Holy like, Bill, why do you keep throwing yourself in front of this particular bus?
Because it can't hurt me anymore. It's run over me too many times.
That's not how buses work.
What?
Yeah, sure it is. Eventually the bus takes so much damage that like the bus is broken.
No, that's
like,
that's only how it works in like side scrolling beat 'em up games.
No, I'm doomsday. Every time it hits me I get stronger.
Okay, sure. Damn. Yeah. Yeah. You heard it here first. Bill killed Superman.
No, literally, if the bus runs over you like a million times, it's out of gas by the end, right?
That's true, yeah. I've survived it. It can't go anymore.
This was also the approach to stopping Derrick Henry for a lot of teams last
year.
This is also what Iowa did against Christian McCaffrey. Speaking of Iowa.
He's more of a mini Cooper. Dan, which team is likely to do this switch from three losses to three wins?
I'm looking at all like the 10 plus win teams.
We should point out Georgia Tech did this by virtue of being hellaciously injured a lot of the year. It wasn't a simple, oh, you played above your weight class. They had some help from kind mother fate.
So Jim Grobe has the advantage of Wake experience of turning a team that's good into not so good. Murmur won 10 wins last year. I'm looking at Power 5 teams. I mean, it's not going to be Northwestern, though they did win 10 games. I'm going to say Wisconsin could win sub 5 games with their schedule this year.
Yeah, it's rough.
With them going 10-3 last year. It's brutal. Navy won more than 10 games, and they lost, like, their best player ever.
Okay.
I'm more curious about, like, other direction. Sub-5 games?
Okay, let's play that.
We don't really do that on this particular program, Dan.
That's why. Yeah,
please.
No, that's why I'm just going to go through them, and then we're going to toss it to Bill. So, obviously, Chris Ash is doing special things. For Rutgers, no, I have no idea who could
Georgia Tech.
Georgia Tech is going to do the NFC South thing, basically.
Right.
And, yeah, also Georgia Tech is going to do this because Paul Johnson is in the fine, like, he's in the fine year of that cycle where he gets everyone wanting to fire him. Everyone realizes they don't have enough money to fire him, and then he rebounds the next year. This is the rebound year where he becomes palatable again.
Speaking of Georgia Tech, I would like to point out our Georgia Tech blog did a nice little piece on Georgia Tech's uniforms. They pointed out who else is a Russell Athletic user at this point. It's a very thin list. I believe the Harlem Globetrotters are on that list. Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's like some D3 schools.
They lost the HBCUs.
The National Little League, whatever, like Little League Baseball is still Russell Athletic.
Yeah, let's see. They've got three other FBS programs. They have Arena Football League. They still have Little League Baseball. So good for them. The other college teams that they have are the Ohio Bobcats and Western Kentucky.
Sharp jerseys, by the way.
Yeah, no, they've done a fine job at Western Kentucky.
Yeah, cool.
But can I give you two other teams,
please,
that were sub five that I could actually pick for a rebound?
Yeah,
to get at least six wins.
Okay.
and build laugh out loud when I say this, Colorado.
Oh, I hope. I really hope so. No, okay, but no, I really hope so.
We're saying hope.
For the record, we picked them to go 5-7, so we are optimistic that they can get close.
Yeah, that's a step.
They'll get close. Mm-hmm. So and Virginia. Can I sell Virginia on being like a 500 team?
Hey, Bronco.
They went 4-8 last year. They were bad.
Yeah, I mean, Kaiser sucked their soul out in the second week of the season, but no, Bronco's a good coach. He got overshadowed by all the other good coaches the ACC hired, but he's you know, that could happen. Sure.
Who do they have? Oh, they're at Oregon, at Bob Diaco's beautiful UConn Huskies. That's not bad. Schedule's fine.
Hasn't Jason kind of named South Carolina as his team that's going to make not quite this big of a leap, but sort of do this?
Well, I'm kind of being branded as like South Carolina mega homer at this point. Like, I have them going from 3-9 to 6-6, and like
double the win total.
I hear about it on Twitter. Like, oh, you're the South Carolina guy. I feel like I'm gonna be around town and like, hey, that's the guy who said Muschamp's going to a ball. Get him. At this point. It's like, I mean, I think they'll be a little bit better. I think.
Are they starting like a high school junior quarterback? Was that a thing I saw?
For sure. He's fresh. He's got new ideas.
Hasn't taken the hits.
Like, he can really enhance their digital media strategy because he knows all about the stuff that the kids are into.
Listen, you know what? He's got a good ability to read patterns on the Snapchats.
Anytime you can have an intern play quarterback, man, you're saving money.
Next question. This comes from Kyra Geithman at Kyra Nicole on Twitter. Which Big 12 expansion candidate would you most trust to send back in time to kill someone? Now,
Say someone, do we mean like baby Hitler?
Man, why do they always make it baby Hitler? Like, why couldn't it be like teen Hitler?
Shitty middle schooler Hitler.
Shitty, gross, smelly, bad hair middle schooler Hitler, who's like, no, I don't want to sit down. Like, yeah, that'd be way easier to kill than
that sounds like
adorable baby.
I think the problem is you would encounter Hitler with like eight other middle schoolers, and you'd be like, well, gotta be safe, and you'd kill them all.
Damn, Brian.
No, not you. You would do that, not me. You would.
No, no, sure, no. I'm not the one who would do that. Kill eight middle schoolers for fun and just brought it up randomly.
Second person.
I mean, I don't really think teen Hitler had a whole lot of friends, so I don't think that sounds like a problem.
Are you kidding me? His whole thing was being popular, even though he shouldn't have been.
So like super. How is this guy so popular?
Yeah, right.
I'm just gonna put it out there. Easiest Hitler to kill is 12-year-old Hitler. Like in the sub-18-year-old Hitlers. 12-year-old Hitler.
That's the single worst age?
Yeah, that's like 11 or 12. You can pick one of the two.
Plus some of the Hitlerness has already started to crystallize at that point.
Yeah, he's giving you sass.
Mm-hmm.
Hitler's sass.
That was everybody's problem with Hitler. Too sassy.
too sassy for me.
So much back talk.
Oh, what a potty mouth that Hitler is. He's disrespectful to his elders. So the obvious answer that jumps out is Air Force. But the problem is it depends on when you're sending them back in time. I always had this problem with the Back to the Future series because, like, if you go too far back in time in a DeLorean, they don't speak English. And you're fucked at that point. They'll just kill you on sight. So I don't think Air Force is necessarily the right answer to this of the Big 12 candidate. I might go with UNLV, the latest bizarre Big 12 expansion candidate, just because they already live in sort of a nonsensical human wasteland that shouldn't exist. And I think everybody in Las Vegas either has or has a plan, has executed or has a plan for how they would get away with a murder.
I got an easy candidate right now, BYU.
Wow.
Mm.
Yeah, maybe for a couple of reasons. One, multiple languages.
Two, history of slaughter.
You said it, not me.
We love you, Matt Brown.
Houston would do anything to get into the Big 12 right now.
Houston might actually be sending people back in time right now. Like some billionaire Texan donor, like, yeah, I got a time machine. And like he's used it to do nothing but buy liquor cheap. That's it. What do? I bring cigarettes from the 60s and I sell them here.
I buy forever stamps in 1999.
Why do you think they smoke Lucky Strikes in the South Side in Houston? Because I sell them there.
I think Colorado State.
Well,
and they're too chill to kill anybody,
yeah,
though.
Yeah, they are pretty chill, but I think you get a little bit of mountain people in there.
No. They're like borderline West Coast, so all you have to do is be like, yo, you said something was bad. That's right. So harsh and judgmental, bro. It makes me want to kill you. Are you in my personal space?
I do think East Carolina, I'll throw in there as well.
You go up to an ECU fan and you say, like, hey, man, this dude in 1917 tweeted that ECU shouldn't be in the Big 12.
I'll kill his ass.
Next thing you know, that person. But Twitter wasn't invented. Doesn't matter.
Oh, no.
I think the answer is Iowa State.
It was my father. It was my father. And you might say, my own existence.
You might say Iowa State is already in the Big 12. First of all, Iowa State cannot afford to take that for granted.
Right.
Because, like, everyone agrees Iowa State, like, shouldn't be in the Big 12. Right. So, like,
they should reapply, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Maybe it should really enhance its resume by going back in time and killing Teen Hitler, Iowa State. Why didn't you do that, Iowa State?
Temple's a good example, too, because they're sort of the college football program that's been to prison and is not going back. So they're like,
been to the jail in the Eagle Stadium. Yeah,
they've been evicted. What are you gonna do? I've been homeless.
Next question. This comes from young GM Rambus at Illegal Screens. What will be the least watchable conference game of 2016?
Mizzou, South Carolina.
Oh, next.
Man, we've got Josh Heupel now. We're good.
Oh, God.
And remember, we also play Vanderbilt.
And remember, South Carolina plays Vanderbilt.
These are all terrible.
And remember, the Boston College has 8 conference games to play. Nine conference games.
What are we talking about? I grabbed some spring rolls.
Oh, sorry.
Hey, Dan.
Dan, we're asking what the least watchable conference game of 2016 will be. We've talked about Boston College and Vanderbilt and Missouri a lot.
Major conference game, least watchable. Kansas-Iowa State might be pretty harsh.
I see. I think that's going to be festive.
Where is that game?
Zero. Does it matter?
No, not really.
Anything about that game?
It's probably at Jerry World, I think.
Yeah. in front of a roaring 100.
That will be on a channel we've never heard of. That will be the one game that's on, like, oh, this is on Root Sports West Southwest.
That's on FS4.
Rutgers and Maryland.
Nah, played. Man. Nah.
I'm on the Rutgers schedule right now.
But they both have new offenses and stuff that they're going to try.
Vanderbilt, South Carolina on like the first day of the season is really bad, especially it's in Nashville. Like, so you're going to have that rust and bad.
Yeah.
Oh, so Godfrey's not around, so you're allowed to talk about Nashville like that?
Yeah, let's talk some shit about Nashville.
I mean,
that's right. I've been waiting so long.
This will be the drunken hangover day after bachelor party of games, where you're just like, why did I agree to do this? I hate Chad.
You know, in Western movies, there are scenes where, like, the chuck wagon rolls up real early in the morning and all the, like, miners and everybody kind of get out with half their pants on, like, right. Oh, hey, the chili's here. That's what it's going to look like. This team's getting out, like, half-dressed, like, oh, hold on, get my other leg in my pants.
And they're singing a song.
Yeah. they're kind of like, toothless and haggard. That's going to be both of these teams in the opening game.
How did South Carolina end up? I feel like we ask this every year. How did South Carolina end up, like, opening the sport every year? Like the NFL Hall of Fame game, it's like always the Packers or whatever, or like Thanksgiving is always the Lions.
Well, it's remember
our,
it's
a, our miserable remember, garbage season opens with South Carolina every year.
Well, remember, it's a tradition for South Carolina to go first in a misfiring effort.
And you remember, who the coach was for so many of these games, Steve Spurrier, who wanted to have a Saturday free for golf. Oh hell, we can play on Thursday. Oh shoot, I can get 36 in then. This is perfect.
Yeah.
Can we play?
Yeah,
what about Wednesday? Can we make it Wednesday at like 10 in the morning?
How about we get week two in on that Saturday then?
Can I break in, by the way, with some completely unverified message board news from
perfect
the last week? This was from a message board, a Michigan message board. I believe it was MGo Blue. This was a comment. I interviewed a woman yesterday who previously served as a personal assistant to Steve Spurrier. Oh, all right. God.
Okay.
Yeah. That's the header. Posted on August
12th. Pretty high.
Posted on August 12th. Key takeaways. One, Spurrier rarely wore either a shirt or shoes when in the football office.
Correct. Yes. believe 100%.
Yeah.
I'm going to save number two because it's real good.
Okay.
Number three, which will be number two here. On at least one instance, he had his assistant take pictures of himself doing push-ups to send to his wife.
But also believe 1,000%.
Well, I totally believe that. Yeah. I do that. If I had an assistant, I would do that.
All right. Now you take those down to Walgreens and get them developed. You hear?
Don't do that one. Makes my arms look fat.
Okay.
That's just lighting. But then the point, which is my favorite, it is the pearl in this delicious oyster. When Spurrier didn't want to perform some obligation, meet with administrators, go to an alumni event, etc., he would simply point to his Heisman trophy and say, "He says I don't have to go." Oh, I'm slain.
I hope Steve Spurrier has driven with the Heisman Trophy, and when he gets pulled over, he switches seats with it, and he's like, "No, man, he was the one going 55 and 30, not me." Yeah,
you can drive in the HOV lane if you have a Heisman.
Next question. This is going to be a dark one. I'm sorry. This comes from Jameson.
So darker than the one about killing teenagers. Okay.
Kind of. Mm-hmm. That was
eight of them. Eight of them in addition to Teen Hitler.
Rumoredly. Also, they hung out with Teen Hitler. They can't be that good of kids. At Sideout Par wants to know, apropos of Fournette, who I believe is in a walking boot as of today, the costliest injury you can recall in terms of depriving a neutral fan of a highly anticipated individual or team season. And he suggests... Dennis Dixon and Marcus Lattimore. Dennis Dixon was the answer I was going to go for this.
Dennis Dixon. You can't say his name without going afterwards.
Yeah,
because he was playing that game on a torn ACL.
Yeah.
And, like, had a 40-yard touchdown run on a torn ACL,
and then completely blew it.
Yeah,
and that one makes me mad. That one makes me mad just thinking about it. Like Lattimore, almost like I mean, I don't think Lattimore is like. Like, it sucks that happened for Lattimore, but it kind of felt like, wow, man, that's just an act of God. With Dixon, I was just like, that's unfair. Unfair.
Yeah, no, I mean, the 07 season, for all the craziness that went on that season, Oregon owned it at that point. Like, it was theirs, and then that happened.
I was at the UCLA game, like, 3 weeks later in L.A., And I think they lost something like 12-0 or 13-0. And it was Jonathan Stewart and a bunch of backups. And I remember with like 6 minutes left, they were down like 8-0. Something that wasn't like normally insurmountable. And my girlfriend at the time was like, we should probably just go, right? And I was just like, shut up! You shut up! We will not go! And that's what the Dennis Dixon injury did to me.
Yeah, I guess that's fair. Todd Gurley coming back from suspension and then getting hurt in a stupid game against Auburn. I mean, by that point, it had not...
Yeah, what was their record at the time?
The season was basically already lost in terms of what Georgia's expectations were at that point. That one sucked. That one sucked a lot. Yeah, I think it has to be Dennis Dixon, though, right now.
That's the worst one I can remember, like, short term, right? And by short term, I mean, like, last 15 years. You could go back...
It was made so much worse by just how bad they were after that injury. Like, that was, and they had everything, and then they had absolutely nothing after that.
I think maybe we can look. It might be Bud time.
Bud time.
All right. Bud also took a look at our picks. He had some thoughts about them. You're going to listen to Bud talk about them right now.
Jason Kirk asked me to take a look at some of the picks made by the guys on the Shutdown Fullcast and weigh in on them. So the first thing that jumped out to me was that it looks like y'all only picked 40-something bowl teams from the Power 5, which would leave, I think, well over 40 spots for Group of 5 teams to play in bowl games, which is cool, but probably also a record by a pretty good margin. Going conference by conference, I kind of think the ACC is going to get 10 bowl teams. I really have a hard time thinking Syracuse, Boston College, Wake, Duke, and Virginia all miss. I think 10 is probably more likely than 9, but it's hard to argue with the ACC picks. Clemson returns to Deshaun Watson and a loaded roster. Florida State returns a loaded roster and now doesn't have to have Sean McGuire be its quarterback. Both would be solid picks there in the Atlantic. I like those. Georgia Tech always plays well when nobody expects them to, so again, like that. Big fan of the TCU pick in the Big 12. I don't really think anybody in the Big 12 has national championship quality roster. So if there are a bunch of non-elite recruiters there, why not go ahead and take TCU? The Oklahoma game is in Fort Worth. I like that. And in the Big 10, Michigan has kind of a cakewalk schedule, and they got Jim Harbaugh. And Ohio State is returning some of the fewest lettermen in the country. Not too bad about that. I can get on board with that. Maybe not 12-0, but maybe so. I mean, they really should go undefeated with this schedule, I have to think. I did like the what you did in the Big Ten West there with everybody basically 6-6, Wisconsin 7-5. The one thing I got to notice, though, here, I know some networks do put out really optimistic picks for every team with the hopes that the specific audience reading one team's picks doesn't overlap too much with the next team's picks and the next team's picks. And so that if you were to maybe chart all of their previews, they'd be betting over in Vegas at like a 90% clip, which is probably not realistic. I feel like you guys are kind of reverse on here, and I like it. This hating ass Bud thing is extended now to the hating ass shutting down Fullcast. Pretty cool here. Obviously inspired by hating ass Spurrier. How many unders did y'all bet? I know in the ACC... counted 5, Big 12 got 3, Big 10 got 5, and actually stopped doing the research after that. But it looks like y'all were betting unders at about a 65 or 70% clip. I think there's maybe going to be more than one undefeated team and probably more than 9 teams that win 10 games in a regular season. So this is going to be interesting to see. Overall, I like what you did. And have fun recording. Oh, but I got to add something else. Somebody in the SEC is going to go 4-8 or 3-9. I don't think there's any way we have all these 5-7 teams. Somebody's going to totally bottom out, and then somebody, I think probably Arkansas or Mississippi State is going to surprise a little bit, and maybe go that 7-5 instead of the 5-7 projection.
All right, we're back with more questions. our guests have decided not to leave yet. They're very dumb.
Oh, I'm about to. Don't worry.
Okay, good.
well, we're coming up on like 8:15 your time. So
yeah, seriously,
so you gotta go to bed.
Well,
what time do you wake up, Bill?
About 4:05.
Oh my
wow,
Bill.
But it's only 5:05 Eastern.
Bill, are you secretly a cop? With like a weird shift? This question comes from Pitt Basketball Shouting at They Stay There on Twitter.
Wow. Hang on. How do you spell that? I want to follow this account. Okay, Pitt Basketball Shouting.
It is at N _ and then all one word, They Stay There.
This sounds good.
Okay. His or her question, I should say. Which is the most generic FBS team?
the most
so like a team that a network could do a show about and the NCAA wouldn't notice the copyright infringement.
Yes. I got it. Eastern Michigan. There is no competition. They even made their field gray. They are the stock photo of college football teams.
They are the creative team FCS Northeast in real life.
I would have said Pitt had they not brought back the Pitt script. Now I love them again, so yeah, I can't say Pitt.
Pitt's doing some things.
Is NC there a State. Memorable Fresno State game from the last, like, post-Reggie Bush game?
Oh, God.
They were good that one year.
Yeah, Tim DeRuiter and Carr, when they ended up upsetting Boise, I believe it was.
Right.
Oh, that sounds right.
Yeah, that was a great game. So they've at least had one interesting thing happen.
Maybe Tulsa.
Okay.
No, you know what I noticed about Tulsa? Like, to put them, I'm telling you, like, one single hair above completely nondescript. All right, maybe two single hairs, because I can think of two things. One, there's the storm warning flag on the side of the helmet, and occasionally they have the nice gold helmets, which are kind of cool. Mm-hmm. And two, they have the loveliest stone on their bleachers. Like, it's really well done.
Yeah.
Oh, wait.
It's an old school.
I'm going to go with FIU. FIU, just nothing to me. Just total blank slate. Might not even be a real school. Has like, a Panther logo that looks like it was stolen from a defunct minor league baseball team. No meaningful memories of FIU whatsoever. They're my most generic team.
We've discussed this before, but if I tell you that they're not in the ACC, is there a single sticky or memorable image, thought, or logo, brand, achievement, player, or moment for NC State besides a fat man getting up on a pole?
Wow.
they run out of a cave. Their fans are like...
I do remember. I do
like
remember
three or four levels of message board rage beyond replacement level.
I do remember Chuck Amato because he definitely had that, like, he definitely had boat muscles. Yeah, Spencer likes to talk about boat muscles. Chuck Amato had boat muscles and boat sunglasses for that matter.
He did. He had a boat face too.
He had a boat face. His hair was always like pushed back by the wind. Oh, yeah. I guarantee you Chuck Amato, as NC State head coach, was wearing swimming trunks under his pants and was like, I got a kneeboard in the car. Let's hit the lake right after this game. I don't even care, man. I just want to shred.
He's a lake people. Like, if you live anywhere near a lake, you there's a certain, like, genre of human. It's just lake people. Right. Like, they're just always itching to gas up the boat.
And you're like,
they're always, like, really tan. They're like kind of stocky, not fat at all.
No,
like,
but it's beer.
Sneaky dad strong. It's like beer strength.
Yeah, if I told you NC State had gone 7-6 for the last 13 straight years, you would believe me. Like, there's no way to really prove me wrong on that.
I don't know that they didn't.
You're like, how did Chuck Amato make his money? And you're like, he invested in Phil Rivers way back in the day. That paid
That's
off.
It. That's it. I just think that's true. He went into his kid making business.
Next question comes from Corbin A. Smith at Corbin A. Smith on Twitter. What's the best Van Morrison song?
Tupelo Honey.
Spencer, is that correct?
No.
okay. Dan, do you want to have a guess here?
I have a lot of Van Morrison thoughts.
I know you do. You're very old.
I like Come Running.
Okay.
Yeah.
Spencer, is that correct?
No! No!
Jason, do you have a guess?
Which one's Van Morrison?
He's the brown-eyed girl guy.
Oh, that sure, that one.
Spencer, is that
correct? I mean, Into the Mystic
Spencer,
is great.
Is that correct?
Yeah, no, God damn it. God. Okay.
All right, I will just guess. I don't think this is right, but I'm going to throw it in. I'm going to say Domino.
Yeah.
Spencer, is that correct?
You are such a disappointment to me as a song.
Spencer, what is the best Van Morrison song?
It's Caravan, Live from the Last Waltz. That's the best, best Van Morrison song. That version of Caravan, that none of you know it, is just, I'm so ashamed of all of you.
No, there are like six that are acceptable. Into the Mystic is great, but it's too much of a wedding song. But yeah, Caravan's one of them. I'm okay with that.
Yeah, what wedding did you go to where they're playing Into the Mystic? Every wedding I go to, like, it's the straight, like, celebration, clap on the one and the three white people wedding music list. Like,
My best friend is Jewish. He married a St. Louis Irish Catholic, and it was amazing. It was the best wedding of all time.
Jason and Spencer, before we wrap this up, I want you to look at our list here, and I want you, last chance, are there any picks we have that you really, really don't understand why we got there or how?
Well, in the very first week of doing this, which if anyone has listened to this point and still don't understand what we did, we picked five teams at random each week and just picked records for them. And Georgia Tech was in that first bunch. And I think in hindsight,
what on earth were we doing?
We have Georgia Tech at 10-2 winning the ACC Coastal.
Ye gods.
And I think if we had not done them first, we would not have arrived at that number. I think later on we fell into a everyone is 6-6 rhythm, which is just, that's a nice rhythm. Uh-huh. You don't really have to think all that hard, but the younger versions of ourselves were just seduced by Paul Johnson.
So optimistic. Yeah, the he of the dark side.
Yeah, you know what? I'm not backing off that 10-2, motherfuckers.
Okay. Spencer, is there anything you want to pump the brakes on that we did here?
You know, I'm real tempted to back off on Texas 9-3.
No, don't do it.
Stick with it. Just stick with it now. Just
you won't regret it.
You know what? No, again, I'm not bowing. I'm not ready to be nice. I'm just gonna go ahead. Texas 9-3. Because you know what? The rest of you are bastards, and as for me, I will be going to Texas. So yes, 9-3.
If I have to look at one, I'm probably feeling less optimistic about UCLA 9-3.
Yeah, I don't know what that's all.
No, I, you know what? I will revise Wisconsin down to. We have Wisconsin at 7-5. Look at the Big Ten West. Man. We have everyone in the Big Ten West going like 6-6, but I'm not changing any of that. That sounds just about right.
Yeah. We have the Big Ten West. We have three teams at 6-6, Purdue 3-9. Iowa is 1-0 against Iowa State. That's it. And Illinois, we chose not to discuss. Now, Wisconsin is also moving down. They were 7-5.
So let's just like take them to 5-7 with the division winner being 6-6.
Hey, man.
I'm okay with that.
All I hear
Nebraska wins, then loses the Big Ten title game and its bowl. Big Ten West champion, 6-8, Nebraska.
I would like to bowl team at 6-8. Yeah. I would like to actually improve one if I could just rate them up.
Yeah.
Because I just feel good about them. I think they're just a magnificent program, and I'm just more bullish on them than I was. Particularly when I think about what Christian McCaffrey could do in his final year in college football.
Yes.
So, I'm joining the internet's number one Stanford fan.
Yes! Right
now. I will upgrade Stanford.
Bow to your cardinal!
Spencer, this raises two problems. One being this breaks our 9-3 log jam in the Pac-12 North.
Logs are made of trees, motherfucker!
And also
every
now...
Every year's a log jam at Stanford.
And also now you've just said that Washington isn't going to win this division right in front of Dan Rubenstein.
That's so embarrassing.
It's tough because we are so negative that it's hard for me to upgrade any of these teams because, God, we're just hating.
You know who I'd upgrade? I'd upgrade USC in the Pac-12.
Okay. 7-5 seems low?
Yeah, I think they could go 8-4 and 9-3.
Yeah, I think that was partially a reflection of their schedule, which has got so much pain potentially on it. But I think 8 wins is not unreasonable. I will.
Are you doing do it? Are you going to change a Pac-12 team?
No, I'm not going to change a Pac-12 team. I will say I think maybe we are a little gun shy on Auburn just because they fell apart so badly last year. I think 7-5. I think that could be an 8-win team. I don't think that's impossible.
I would.
Jeez, don't go crazy.
Bill, 8 wins for us is like most favored nation status. Have you seen this list?
It's true, man. We grade like a French professor, man. Oh wow, you got 6 out of 10. That's actually pretty good. You're the prime minister now.
Zut alors! You're going to the Outback Bowl.
Another. I will also confess. I'm a Tennessee 10-2 because I really want them to have every expectation to live up to and fail. Oh, so
yeah, that was very transparent.
So I was just looking at Tennessee. That's, man, the local paper saying, is Josh Dobbs better than Tim Tebow? Like,
yeah, no,
what?
No,
that.
You need
that
to really...
was like what somebody did. That was like what Fox Sports Knoxville like had a poll. Like,
oh yeah,
yeah.
Vince Young. I saw one against Vince Young too.
Yeah, and it sort of seems like Tennessee is in a place. They have Virginia Tech week 2 in Bristol. They've got like a tricky App State team to start the year, and it's not. It's just not a great schedule in the front half. Where if they lose one or two games, I feel like they could collapse under some like pressure weight. I don't know.
No, you need to consider it, Dan. You need to consider it. Josh Dobbs might be better than Tim Tebow.
That's true.
I don't necessarily think it's going to happen, but our Big Ten West smorgasbord of mediocre could absolutely be the SEC East this year. Could absolutely be a bunch of teams that are good enough to beat each other, but inconsistently, and they all just drag each other. It becomes basically one of those rat nests where they're all tied together by the tail and biting each other until there's only one big fat rat left. And that's how Kentucky wins the SEC East.
I mean, just, you know, we do have to consider how good Josh Dobbs is. Just because his coaches don't trust him to throw a single, like, 1st-and-10 play-action bomb all year, that doesn't mean, you know, that he can't throw that pass and doesn't have a quarterback's arm. He could be Vince Young.
Hey, man.
No, hypothetically.
You know, the disciples didn't always trust Jesus. Didn't mean he didn't have powers. Before we go, we have one. First of all, does anybody else have any other last comments they want to make on our terrible predictions? Any other observations, plugs you want, anything like that?
Just the sexiest desire ever, the borderline erotic urge to turn the 6-6 Arkansas record into a bold 10-2 prediction that I will resist.
Okay.
Man, I won't.
Okay.
No. I'm sitting at a thrilling 6-6.
Okay. Bill, anything else you want to add before we wrap up here?
Mizzou's got Josh Heupel. I just wanted to reinforce that.
again, Bill, you're saying that in a way that doesn't really. Can you like blink twice if that means it's good or bad or what? I have no idea what that means.
We're winning games 12-10 this year instead of losing them 9-6.
My God, what have you become?
Lord, you sound like a Florida fan.
What have Fuck you, Jason. Typical South Carolina homer, Jason Kirk. Talk your shit while you can. Dan Rubenstein, any other thoughts you want to add before we wrap up?
No, but I like the fact that Bud earlier said Trevor Knight is a reasonable bet if you're going to wager money on the national championship.
Hey, man. Scared money don't make money.
Although I think Texas A&M is going to be super entertaining this year.
Sure. Entertaining. Well, they actually have seniors for like first time in 4 years.
And yeah, I think entertaining is a good word for it.
And sure. before I went on the Good Bull, our sister Good Bull Hunting podcast, Never Been Clicked, I did look at the Texas A&M roster, and it is fun to go back and be like, oh yeah, they do that have a bunch of guys that you thought were told were going to be fucking awesome coming out of high school. They haven't done shit, but they're still there. Jason, you have the floor last before we give it to Bud to talk about. Well, I'll save that for a surprise, but you have the last word.
We have LSU at 11-1. That's an error. Tigers are going 12-0. Fuck you all.
Woo! Yeah. Okay, so last thing of the evening, our last Bud Elliott segment. He's here to talk to you. about Florida wildlife. Good night, y'all.
As we spoke about on the last Shutdown Fullcast, pythons in the Everglades are still a big thing, which is bad. If you go on my Twitter account, at Tomahawk Nation, on Monday I did retweet an account, which I have no idea if it's true or not. Looks like it probably is. A 17-foot python with 87 eggs was caught in Florida, and yeah, that's kind of scary. Not a big fan of that. We also have Nile crocodiles, apparently now in Florida, which is a new thing, a new threat. Ultimately, I hope that the crocodiles and the pythons in the Everglades can sort of wipe each other out, like Godzilla versus Ty, if you're editing this, fill in that monster that Godzilla fought in one of those movies.